For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's September the 4th. So we said that we would start Derech Hashem. I see somebody brought a sefer. Okay. So, but we said that rather than reading it word for word, we're going to summarize a parak. We'll start with the first parak, and we will see how practical we can make it. Now, this is going to be very practical, even though it's going to start off sounding very impractical. It's going to start sounding very maybe perhaps interesting, but not practical, and you'll see that it will be. Okay, so let's see where it goes. Now, as I mentioned to you last week, Derech Hashem, when the Ramchal wrote Derech Hashem, which means the way of Hashem, so it's meant to describe the way that Hashem runs the world. So it does get very interesting, and it tackles some very, very difficult philosophical issues like Tzadik V'ra Lo and Rasha V'Tov Lo, things of that nature. And it really does help with dealing with how to understand a lot of the things that go on in the world that don't seem to make sense. But in his first parak, he does what you'd expect him to do when he's talking about Derech Hashem, which is describe Hashem. And describing Hashem could seem, at least, to be very, very dry. So let's bear with me as I summarize for you what he says in the first parak, and then we'll see what we can do with it. So it starts off sounding like the Rambam. He makes six observations about HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we have to know. And he says that it is impossible for a human being to understand Hashem. And not only can we not understand Hashem, we even lack the words to express what we know about Hashem. We almost lack the vocabulary, because by definition we are human beings and we're created beings, and a created being can't fully comprehend what the Creator is. But there are six things that we know about HaKadosh Baruch Hu which we must realize. It says, number one, we have to know that He exists. That's pretty straightforward. We all know HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists. But what does that mean? What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He exists? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is He is Nitzchi, which means He's always been here. He's Kadmon V'Nitzchi. He's always been here, and He will always be here. And He is the ultimate cause of everything. You know that in the world there's a cause and there's effect, and there's many, many, many causes and many, many, many effects. And one item or one thing or one person can simultaneously be an effect and a cause, a cause and an effect. We're constantly affecting each other and causing each other to think things, do things, react in different ways. Elements, things are going on that we are constantly interacting with. Everything we do, every movement we make, every word we utter, every thought that we think makes things happen. And there are causes, there are effects. So on a very simple level, I'm talking to you, you're listening, so there's a cause. The cause is I'm speaking, which is an effect that you're listening. At the same time, you're the cause of my speaking, because if you wouldn't be in this room, I wouldn't be talking, I hope. Right. So you're causing the effect of my speech, which is causing the effect of your listening. Right? So that's a very simplistic example, but that goes on all the time. All the time. So good. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is only a cause. He's not an effect. He's only a Siba. He's never an effect. He's always a cause. And everything is caused by Him. Nothing happens which isn't ultimately caused by Him. So He is, that's one thing. He exists, and that means that He always has been, always will be, and He is the source of everything. And you know, when you say Shema Yisrael, you're supposed to think that. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem, the name Hashem, Yudke Vavke, you're supposed to think Haya Hove V'yihye, because Yudke Vavke is a contraction of Haya Hove V'yihye, was, is, and will be. That's one thing. And the Adon Hakol, because we read it as Adnos. It's written Yudke Vavke, which is Haya Hove V'yihye, but we pronounce it, we enunciate it as Adnos. Adnos means master. The concept of master means that He is the cause of everything. He's the source of everything. No one has any power, has any ability to do anything without Him. Nothing has the ability even to exist without Him. It all comes from Him. He's the source that everything else revolves around. Everything emanates from Him. That's what Adnos means. So when you say Yudke Vavke, this is the point you're thinking. You say Hashem in Shema Yisrael, you're thinking He was, is, and will be, Kadmar V'Nitzchi, number one, and number two, He is Adnos, He is the Adon HaKol, everything comes from Him, He's the cause of everything. That's one. The Ramchal goes on to say, you also have to know that He is Shalem, He's complete, there's nothing lacking in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He is inherently Shalem. He doesn't need anything, doesn't lack for anything, He just is perfect. This creates a philosophical conundrum, which I will present to you, only so that if you choose to think about it, you won't fall asleep tonight. But there's no answer to this question, at least no answer that a human being can fathom, which is the following. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Shalem, He's complete, there is nothing lacking, that means that there can be nothing that He does for Himself. Can't be. He doesn't need anything. So therefore, there can't be any sense of lack that He needs to fulfill. Why do we eat? Because we're hungry. Why do we go to work? Because we need money. Why do we talk to people? We want camaraderie. We want companionship. We're always fulfilling our needs when we do things. We can make our needs more sublime, that I feel bad for you, so I want to do for you, but that ultimately it's fulfilling my need. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have any needs. So there can be no motivation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has which is for Himself. So we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is motivated by wanting to be mativ to others. That's us. That's why He does things. But that doesn't answer what could have happened that would have triggered His creating the world. What could have happened? Think about it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. There's nothing else. There's no space, there's no time, there's no gashmius, there's no ruchnius, there's nothing. It's just HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And, I can't say and then, because there's no time. So I don't know what that means. But a world is brought into existence. Why? He's not lacking anything. Nothing could have affected Him. So what triggers that first, once the world is created, okay, so He created creatures, beings, now He wants to be mative to them, okay? But what brought about that? No answer to that question. Can't answer that question. It's impossible for a human being to wrap their mind around that, because He can't have anything that gets Him started, because there's nothing that can affect Him.
What I saw is that He wanted to give good to us, right? So if He wants to give good to us, then someone who is naturally, if Hashem is giving, right? Hashem is giving, so then He naturally wants to give. So He's complete. He doesn't need.
When did He want to give?
Always.
So then, was there ever a point in time where there was no Bria? Right? You see what I'm saying? Like, when did it happen? What happened that all of a sudden now He wants to make it? It's a funny kind of, right? So it's very difficult. It's really a conundrum that we can't answer. And okay, we're limited. We're human beings. We can't know everything. Okay, but it is a philosophical conundrum. At any rate, so we have that He is Kadmon V'Nitzchi. He's the source of everything. It's one, two. He is completely Shalem. There's no lack at all. Okay, those are two inherent things. Now, can I borrow your there, Hashem? I have to remind myself of the six things. There's the main one I want to get to. We will talk about it at length, but I want to at least present to you what these things are, so you know them. So, okay, just one second. Yeah. So another one, I'm doing a little bit out of order. Another one is, and this is also what you're supposed to think about when you say Shema Yisrael, is that Hashem isn't dependent on anything else. Until now we said Hashem is the source of everything, which means everything is dependent on Hashem. But at the same time, Hashem is completely independent of everything else. Everybody is dependent. We're all dependent on things. We like to try to be as independent as possible, especially at your age. But the fact is, we're all very independent. We're all very dependent, completely dependent on each other, on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on all kinds of things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is totally independent. There is no dependence whatsoever. He doesn't need anybody else or anything else. He exists of his own self, whatever that means. You're supposed to think about that when you get to the word Elokeinu in Shema Yisrael. Elokeinu means that he is the he's the Baal HaYecholos Baal HaKochos Kulam. All strength, all abilities come from him. So he doesn't need any abilities, and nothing has to support him. So on the one hand, everything's dependent on him. On the other hand, he's completely independent. So that's a third aspect of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A fourth one, which is one of these things which is hard to pin down, he just says, you also have to know that the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mukhrach. It must be. It's impossible that there isn't a HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not just that we choose to believe that there is a God. It's impossible that there wouldn't be HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That already, if you want to chew on that, you can try. That's a tough one to chew on. Why is that true? So you can work on that.
So I'm doing my philosophy class.
Okay, all right. Why does it need to be? It is a must be. Okay. But the last two, those are four things. The last two have to do with Echad, which is the rest of Shema Yisrael. It's all included in Shema Yisrael. What do you think about when you say Echad, Hashem is one? What does that mean? What do you think about Hashem is one?
Just move your head in all four directions.
Okay, to think that what? What does it mean that he's one?
Hashem is everywhere and every place at the same time.
Okay, so he's all encompassing. Okay, what else do you think about when you say Echad?
He has one ratzon.
He has one ratzon?
Meaning like the din and the chesed is one.
Okay, there's a uniformity. Like, what else?
He doesn't work with anyone.
Okay, there's no other God, right?
No.
He has no partners. Right, okay. So, everybody understands Echad. That last one is the simplest part of Echad. There are no other gods. It's just Hashem. That's it. There's no one else. Lo yelecha Elohim Echem apanai. That's it. He's by himself. But the other aspect of Echad, which is a little bit more subtle, which was what just brought up before, is the fact that he is himself uniform. There are no parts to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He is Echad. He is the ultimate oneness in that there is a pashtus, there's a simplicity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is a funny thing to say. You think HaKadosh Baruch Hu must be the most complex entity possible. But the emes is that he's simple in that there are no parts. There are no pieces. There are no internal struggles. There's nothing. He just is. And what the Ramchal writes is that, you know, we are complex creatures because we're made up physically and emotionally of completely different parts, besides the fact that we have a hand and a head and an arm and a foot and all that. Besides we have all that, but internally we have Ratzon, we have Chachma, we have Zikaron, we have Machshava, we have then throwing all the emotions. We have Atzlus, we have Atzvus, we have Simcha, we have Ahava. all these things are different things, and we often struggle with them. Which one is going to be the most significant thing right now? A person can go from laughing to crying in the same couple minutes, right? There's a struggle within us, and we know we struggle with ourselves. So we're very complex. Even the fact that we are a physical being with a spiritual soul, that's a harkava, that's a grafting of two worlds into one being. That's a human being. Kadosh Baruch Hu has no complexity like that. He just is. Kadosh Baruch Hu has no physical features. He has no emotions. He has no conflicts. He is not physical. He is not spiritual. It is wrong to say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Ruchnius. He's not Ruchnius. Ruchnius is a creation, just like Gashmius is a creation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is neither one. He just is. And the Ramchal says this is something which a human being cannot wrap their mind around. There's a pashtus, there's a simplicity, there's an achdus. He just is. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As an aside, a short diktuk lesson, that you know that, like you said, when you say the word achad, so they bring in the paiskim to move your head in all directions, as long as people don't look askance at you, right? But to think about that he's in all four directions and up and down, and he's everywhere, and that he's there are no other gods, and that he is one, and he has no parts. That's a lot to think about. So the Gemara says you're supposed to think about it when you elongate the Dalet, the letter Dalet. So the letter Dalet, you're supposed to draw it out. And as you draw it out, think about all these things. The problem is the letter Dalet is very hard to draw out. Echad. Right? How are you supposed to draw it out? So what people do is they draw out the kamats under the ches. Echad. But that's not what the Gemara says. Gemara says to draw out the Dalet, not the kamats under the ches. So how's that possible? You can't. Dalet is a hard sound. A hard sound can't be drawn out. You can only draw out soft sounds. So the reason is because the Dalet is one of the letters like Bez, Kaf, He, that have a hard sound and a soft sound. If Bez, Vez, Kaf, Chaf, Pe, Fe, Tuf, Suf. So there are two other letters that fit that family of letters, Gimel and Dalet. There's a hard Gimel and a soft Gimel, and a hard Dalet and a soft Dalet. We Ashkenazim, and really Sfardim as well, have lost over the years the two sounds. But there are two sounds. The Temanim still hold on to it. The Gimel seems to be a Gimel and a Zhimel. That would be the two sounds. And the Dalet would be a D sound and a V sound. If there's a Dagesh in the Dalet, it's a D sound, a D. If there's no Dagesh in the Dalet, it's a V sound. So the true, it seems to be, that the true pronunciation of the word Echad is actually Echad. Now that you can draw out. Echad, because V is a softer sound, and you can draw it out. So if we were speaking properly, I don't know if V is the exact sound it's supposed to make, but it's something like that. If we were speaking properly, it would be possible to draw out that Dalet. But as it is, we can't draw it out, so it's better to end the word, just say Echad, and then think what you're supposed to think, instead of drawing out parts that aren't supposed to be drawn out. Okay, that's an aside. I'll make Chaim Rim's grandfather proud of us that we did some dikduk in the car. Okay. So this uniformity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very difficult for us to really understand, but it is so. Now, this is where it will lead into a very practical understanding of Echad and Achdus. We talk about Achdus all the time. We throw that word around all the time. It would be great if we had Achdus. We should have Achdus. Everybody should be one. But we know that is it's a very difficult thing to achieve. The reason why Achdus is difficult to achieve is because we're different people. And internally, we're not Echad. Even each one of us ourselves is not Echad. Physically, we have different parts. Emotionally, we have different parts. We're a physical and a spiritual being connected to each other. We're not uniform, even in ourselves. Certainly, separate people are not Echad. We are created as being muvdal, separated. We're not created as one. Therefore, achdus is very difficult to achieve. And in fact, the achdus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is impossible for a human being to achieve. We can't have the achdus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whenever we use the word achad to refer to something other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're really only saying that there's a oneness which is in some way similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's not truly one. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu is truly one. There is nothing else that is truly echad but HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything else is just a, in comparison to what he is, over here you find a little bit nuance that's sort of like the echad of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's all we're saying. But there is no real echad other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By the way, when we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is echad, and that he doesn't have any of these things, he doesn't have emotions, he doesn't have struggles, when the Torah says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like we said, he wants to be meitiv, he wants to do good, he wants to be give good to others, it's not an emotion. We don't know what it's him, that's what he does. We can only describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu based on what he does. So if he is a Rachaman, so he does Rachmanus, we can call him a Rachaman. He's merciful, because we see he does Rachmanus. If he does Chesed, so we can say that he's a Mischased. But it's not that he's a human being with these emotions and that he feels bad for us or empathizes with us. That's just the way that he acts. His actions are actions of empathy, actions of mercy, actions of din. Those are actions, but it's not that he is those things, because those are human things.
So all this, like, you know, Hashem loves you, if he doesn't love us,
right,
he acts in a way that's
but
love.
It's not fake. When we say acts in a way, it sounds like it's fake, right? It doesn't sound real.
Okay.
Right? He does love us, but it's not in the emotion of love that you and I know as the emotion of love. His actions are actions that if we would do them, we would call it love.
So we need to correct all these songs.
Right? No, but he's saying he does love us, but not, it's not what we are thinking about when we say love.
We think in our terms.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. Even when we say, we all know that when it says Yad Hashem, hand of Hashem, it's not real, right? That just means it's a way for a human being to understand the thing. If it would be a human being, it would be a hand. But we fail to think about the fact that that's true even when it says Vayomer Hashem. He doesn't speak. He doesn't have a mouth. He doesn't speak. It's what we would call speech if it was a human being doing it. Hashem doesn't think. He doesn't have a brain. All that is describing Hashem in human terms. Any term we can use is wrong, because any term we can use is a human term, and that by definition that's wrong.
Rabbi Katz says that, like, it really, there is a Yad Hashem, and it's our hand that's wrong.
You can it's a semantic, right? It's really saying
the same thing, but not, because it's saying like Hashem does have a hand, just our perception of what a hand is different.
If you say Hashem has a hand, you would have to say that the hand, the foot, the mouth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are all echad. It's not separate parts. So what does that mean?
But there is a Yad Hashem.
But what does it mean? It doesn't look like this.
Right.
It doesn't look like anything. It doesn't have a body. So what does it mean? So it's very, very difficult to... Okay. So now, here's the unbelievable thing. We know that of all of the midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we know there's Mahu Afata, he's a Rachum with me, a Rachum, he's a Chanum with me, a Chanum, he's Mavaka Chola, we should be Mavaka Chola, all the things of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we know that what's the one that is the most significant one, the most important midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what's that? Ad Kedei Kach, that it is actually one of the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shalom. Shalom is the most important one. That's the one HaKadosh Baruch Hu treasures the most, is Shalom. So we know that. The reason why Shalom transcends all the other midos in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Echad. And in Echad, there's no conflict. There can't be conflict because there's no two parts. You can only have conflict when you have two things. When you have one thing, there can't be conflict. That's why most people don't beat themselves up, right? Because right, but you could get angry at yourself. It does happen. But when you have one uniform thing, there can't be conflict because there's nothing for it to have conflict with. So shalom of all the midos is the one that is the most. It's hard to use this word. The most, the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course, we don't know the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's the most that we can get. It's the closest thing we can get to in the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because we know that He is one. So, Shalom is the most significant. Therefore, it's a name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it is the thing that He wants from us the most, is Shalom. The thing is that shalom for us is never simple. And the reason why shalom for us is never simple is, as I keep on saying, because we're not echad. We are so many parts, both each of us, internally, externally, and as a group, we all look different, we all think different, we all act different, we all have different experiences. There's so much differences among us that shalom is a very difficult thing to achieve, because there's so much potential for conflict. It's not just potential. There's inherent conflict within us. Internally, externally, there's inherent conflict all the time. In order for there to be shalom, one has to actively pursue it. Ohev shalom v'rodev shalom. It's the only way, is if we're actively pursuing it. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. The natural state of a human being, or any created being for that matter, is conflict. That's the natural state. It is through great effort that we can achieve shalom. But it requires great effort. When we want to have shalom among us, it requires a letting go of those things that create differences. Now, we can't let go of our physical differences. That's going to be there no matter what. When I say physical differences, I don't only mean that we look different. We happen to occupy two different places. I'm sitting here, you're sitting there. That's a difference. We can't change that difference. It's impossible. Right? So there are physical and emotional differences that are there, and they're never going to be able to be removed. But we can still let go of how those things affect us to be in conflict with each other. And so shalom is a very, very difficult thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created things that are inherently in conflict. Fire and water. Eish and Mayim are inherently in conflict. Now, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have to have them in conflict. When did HaKadosh Baruch Hu bring them together? Makas Barad. In Makas Barad, a Makah is inherently something which is because of Pirud, because he's punishing Paro. But at any rate, in Makas Barad, he took two things which are inherently in conflict and brought them together. Because for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing's in conflict. He could have everything uniform, but he created things that naturally are in conflict with each other. There are other things that are naturally in conflict with each other. They can't coexist. When Chazal say that Ish v'Isha, Shalom b'neihem, Shechina b'neihem, the reason for that is, when Ish v'Isha have Shalom b'neihem, then they are now resembling HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because they are bringing an Achdus to their marriage. Whenever there is Shalom, Shechina is drawn to it. It's almost like a magnet. When there's Shalom, the Shechina is pulled towards that Shalom, because Shalom resembles the Shechina more than any other midah. So when there's shalom between people, the Shechina is brought in to those people. Why by Ish v'Isha more than anything else? Because Ish v'Isha, it says in the Pasuk, V'hayu l'basar echad. There's an element of echad with a husband and wife, which is greater than any other type of human achdus. We talk about achdus, Klal Yisrael should be echad, we should have achdus amongst each other, but among human beings, the unity that is most like the achdus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's possible, is the achdus of a husband and wife. Why is that so? Why should that be? Because Adam and Chava originally started as one and then were separated. And we know that the quest of marriage is to reunite the two parts that had been together before. So there is more of an inherent achdus between a husband and wife, or potentially I should say, between a husband and wife, than any other type of social interaction. And therefore, shalom b'neihem, shechina b'neihem, they can achieve an achdus which is a greater achdus than other human achdus, which puts them closer to the Shechina. Now, of course, it's never going to be like the Shechina, because at the end of the day, even the best marriage, it's two people, two physically different people, occupying different places, thinking different thoughts, with different emotions, different backgrounds, etc., 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 etc. So there's never going to be a true Achdus, meaning the Achdus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Echad of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but there is the potential of a very significant Achdus. That's why Shalom Beinehem, Shechina Beinehem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want there to be total and complete Achdus in the world. We have divisions in the world that Hashem does not want crossed. He doesn't want those divisions to be annulled. He wants the divisions to be there. We say them every day. We say them every Motzei Shabbos. Bein Yisrael la'amim, bein Yom HaShiyah l'Shishin Me'amaseh, Yom V'Layla. There are differences that are created in the world that Hashem does not want them to be, those differences to become one. So He's not interested in that. He created Havdalah. He created differences. He created differences, as I keep saying, among people. But there are things which He wants us to differentiate between, like Shabbos and the rest of the week, like Jews and non-Jews. He wants there to be a differentiation. So He's not interested in all of the Bria becoming a uniform whole, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a uniform whole. That's not what He wants. What He wants is that the whole Bria agrees and decides to be focused completely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what He wants. But it is with the differences that each person and each group has. So we are therefore in a state of a funny it's a dichotomy that we're in. It's a funny thing. On the one hand, we are inherently different. There are differences that Hashem wants us to keep. On the other hand, we're supposed to try to get along as much as possible. Achdus, shalom, that's what we're looking for. So within the same Bria, there's Pirud, there's Havdalah, and then Hashem wants us to work at Achdus. Okay. So, where's the practical side of all that? First, let me take any questions on this before we move to the more practical side. Okay. You know, when I talk about dating, I come to this honestly. When I was in yeshiva, I was a younger man. So, when Bachram start dating, some understand dating naturally. They understand what to do, they understand, you know, what they're looking for and how to, right? And some need a little bit of guidance. You know, they don't naturally know what they're supposed to be doing, right? So one of the things I used to do as a younger man living in, on Yeshiva Lane was to offer some guidance for Bachram who were starting to date. And I had like a session and I sat with them and gave them some guidance for it. So what I'm trying to say is this is not out of the blue. But when a person is dating, so boy or girl, doesn't make a difference. So there are really only three things that are important in dating. The three things are true for everybody, and there aren't any more things. Everything else fits into these three things. So the most obvious one that everybody understands, and it is important, is that the two people have to be physically attracted to each other. There's no, can't have marriage without that. That's simple. Meaning, what I mean to say it's simple is that everybody knows that you need that. Okay? You can have questions of how much that has to be. You can have questions of, well, what if it's not right away? Can it come later? Those are details. But it's obvious that it has to be there. The other two things are that you have to have common goals. If you don't have common goals, then a marriage is a disaster. A simple difference would be if one wants to live in Eretz Yisrael, one wants to live in America, and neither one is going to budge, well, then they can't be married to each other. I mean, it would be a very, very interesting long-distance marriage. Right? They'll meet somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean every once in a while. Like, that's a little bit weird. So that's not going to work. But that's true in many different types of uncommon goals. If one is interested in sending their kids to one type of school and one is interested in sending their kids to a different type of school, well, they're not going to get along. It's not going to work. So they have to have common goals. Oh, I'm talking about broad goals, not specific little things, but the broad picture of where they're headed has to be the same. The third thing is what they call, there's various words for this. In my day, they used to call it chemistry. Chemistry is this elusive word that, you know, well, I don't know what it means. They get along with each other. You know, you can be attracted to someone, not get along with them. You can have common goals and not get along with them. They get along with each other. They like each other. They interact. What does it mean? What does that mean? But you need that. Whatever that is, you need it. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. So whatever that is, in your own minds, it doesn't matter. You can think of that however you want. What makes that happen? What makes chemistry happen? So there was a Maisa back in the early 80s. I think I told you this. Back in the early 80s, there was a Torah Masorah convention. And at the Torah Masorah convention, the big issue of the day was the alarming spike in the divorce rate amongst Hmong people. Did I speak about this before? I talk about this?
Here?
Yeah, in this form. Anybody remember this?
A lot of different people.
Okay. So there was an alarming spike in the divorce rate. Now this is like around 1980. So imagine today. Right? But then at that time, they were noticing an alarming spike in the divorce rate amongst Hmong people. So the Torah Masorah convention was all about what is the cause, what can we do about it, da 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 da. So every Rosh Yeshiva had his take. And a lot of people spoke about selfishness and, you know, being self-centered, etc., etc., etc. So Rav Enzenberger was there at the time, and he was being Meshamish to Shira Zechon Racha Rav Ruderman, and he told me that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky Zechon Racha got up and he said that the alarming spike in the divorce rate is because people are marrying others, they're marrying each other, and they don't have the same background. And that's the problem. He said that Ashkenazim are marrying Sfardim, and Hasidim are marrying Misnagdim, and he probably didn't say this, but New Yorkers are marrying out-of-towners, and rich are marrying poor, Israelis are marrying Americans, etc., etc. And that's the problem. That's what he said. So Rebeza told me that at the time he was thinking to himself, like, that's the problem? I can understand that That could be a contributing factor, but that's the problem. But over time, he came to realize, and when we discussed it, I realized it as well, that that really is an issue. Now, before I say anything more, understand that it doesn't mean that you can't have two people who have a beautiful marriage and they come from different backgrounds. It happens all the time. But you have to know that different backgrounds make it more difficult to achieve this chemistry, to achieve this shalom, this achdus. He said, by the way, Balei Tshuva should marry Balei Tshuva, FFBs should marry FFBs. He included all that, everything. Gerim should marry Gerim. It is everything. Any of these classes and differences which grate on us when we hear it, because we believe in, what do you mean? We're all very accepting, especially in Atlanta, right? Everybody belongs. What do you mean? You're going to start making these differences? You're going to start cutting people into different groups? So he wasn't saying that people should be ostracized or pushed out, but he was saying if you want to have a successful marriage, it is very important to have a common background. The reason is because when you have different backgrounds, your frame of reference is different. Just think about it. What about humor? Jokes? You all know that different cultures find different things funny and different ways of saying things funny. I knew a man, when we lived in Columbus, Ohio, I knew a man who moved, he was a Russian, and he moved from Russia to the United States. And he told me that he was struggling with a job, whatever it was. So I said, well, what did you do when you were in Russia? He said, I was successful in Russia. So what did you do? He said, I was a comedian. So I said, well, what about here? He said, I'm not funny here. Nobody laughs at anything I say. He didn't know how to be funny in America, because it's a totally different frame of reference. He told me the jokes. Of course, the translation destroys it in the first place, right? But then he told me some of the jokes. And I was like, yeah? Did you hear about the man who lost his job? Yeah, he was wearing blue jeans. What? And apparently it was a real knee slapper in Moscow. I don't know. But it's a completely different frame of reference. Now that's a very extreme example. But it happens on a subtle level also. So that where the humor is difficult when you have different backgrounds, it's also difficult when you get into things like deep emotional stuff, where one isn't hopping where the other one's coming from. What are you talking about? What's the issue? I don't understand. There are differences in that with men and women in general, but even just understanding why is this important to you? I don't get it. Or even getting what is important to you. It's not just getting why is it, but even getting what is important. What? That's important? To understand body language. To understand that this means this, and this nuance means that, and when I tilt my head this way, I mean to convey perhaps a feeling of empathy, where someone else may interpret that as a feeling of resignation. I don't know. Like, there's all kinds of different things that different nuances can mean, and culturally, people are different. So that, again, it is possible to have a successful marriage with a New York Hasidish FFB marrying an out-of-town misnagid balas tshuva. It's possible. It's possible, but the cards are stacked against you because it's very hard to share the common background. It's very hard. You get lost with each other. You're not picking up what each other, what you mean. You're not picking up where you're coming from. You don't really understand each other's essence, and therefore, the when looking for a shidduch, it is to your advantage to be seeking someone who is similar in background. If we're talking about Atlanta, we're probably talking about an out of towner, or at least someone who acts like an out-of-towner, who has that out-of-town attitude. You know the difference. When I say out-of-town, I don't mean where you're physically living. I mean there's an attitude. There's an in-town attitude and there's an out-of-town attitude. When you're talking about your own your own family's financial status. Even if you believe that I want to change it. I grew up wealthy and I really don't want to live that way. Or I grew up poor and I want to be wealthy. Even if you want to change it, but you're going still to connect better. You will relate better. You'll have better chemistry with a person who grew up in a similar home that you grew up in a similar financial place that you grew up in. Even if you want to change it, find someone who wants to change it also. But you'll have a similar frame of reference. Even large families and small families, we have this big thing, you know, everybody who comes from a small family, Dafka wants to marry into a large family because they don't have family, they want family. And people with large families often want to marry into small families because it's busy enough and I want to get it, right? But it's not so simple. It's not so simple. People from small families don't understand large families, and large families don't understand small families. It's a different way of thinking. It's a totally different way of thinking. So there's obviously you're not going to get it all to line up perfectly. You can't. But it's definitely worthwhile, if possible, to try to have similar backgrounds. We did speak about this to some extent because when I told you that really, if it wasn't for the fact that the Torah answers it, as frightening as this may seem, the best possible marriage is a brother and sister. Right. A brother and sister would have been the best possible marriage that they could be. As frightening as that sounds. And that's why the Gemara says that the best possible marriage is an uncle and a niece. A man marrying his sister's daughter. Because his sister's daughter is the closest thing to his sister. So that would be the best marriage. That's what the Gemara talks about as the most sought after shidduch. That's allowed. Yeah. An aunt can't marry a nephew, but an uncle can marry a niece. So that would be the best if it's possible. Today we won't do it because we're worried about the bloodlines, etc. But it is be'etzem the closest backgrounds you can have. They will likely share most experiences, and that will lead to the most likely shalom bayis. So this is all because we don't have the achdus that is inherent to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was the segue, just to make sure we come back to that. But we don't have that. And in a marriage where the whole thing is to try to get to that echad, the Hayu Levasar Echad, that this is a very significant piece of the puzzle. Again, I don't want to scare anybody into thinking that it's not possible otherwise, but it is important. You will find naturally anyway that you'll just find that you connect better to someone from a similar background. You'll just feel that way. It'll, like, you know, it just feels more right. It just feels more natural because you get each other better. It's a natural thing. Questions? Comments? Okay. Yes, Hashem, we'll continue next week.
Thank you.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.